Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
You're listening to WCOM LP 103.5 FM Carborough and Chapel Hill. It's a Tuesday, it's 5 o'clock, and that only means one thing. It's time for another round of Snarky Faith with your host, Stuart Deloney. This is a space where we irreverently wrestle through life, culture, and spirituality, all with our heads in the clouds, our tongues in our cheeks, our hearts in our sleeves, and our feet on the ground. At Snarky Faith, the questions, or even the answers, are never the point. It's all about the conversation. So here's your host, Stuart Deloney.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to another round of Snarky Faith Radio. I am your host, Stuart Deloney, and thank you all. We're kind of coming off a little bit of a quasi-hiatus here on the show, but we're back. We are back, and guess what? The world is still insane. The world is still crazy because we still have the Orange Messiah in the White House, except this week, he's actually not in the White House. He's overseas, and we can rejoice a little bit from that. I don't really know. There's really not much to rejoice these couple days. It has been in an insane couple of weeks where, as you watch the news, like, I want to hearken back. I want to go back to the days where we had, like, one major breaking news story involving the president, like, a week. Like, I would take that. And any normal presidency having some sort of shock or scandal weekly would still be way over the top. But we are living in a new universe right now, people. We are living in a new alternative reality that is scary, and it feels post-apocalyptic, like, or maybe it's pre-post-apocalyptic, if that even makes sense. But oh my gosh, from everything from Russia to Comey to all of this, this stuff continues to spiral more and more out of control. Like, crazy left the station long ago. Like, we're going towards insanity, and I'm not sure what the progression between crazy then to insane then to, I don't really know what the next one is, and I actually hope we don't see whatever the next thing is in the midst of all of this that we're dealing with right now on a daily basis. So what does all of that have to do with a show called Snarky Faith? Well, yes, we originally started off the show to simply talk about the craziness of Christianity in the news today, to be able to give an alternative view on how to look at Christianity, not from the right-wing nut jobs, not from the religious right, not from all of those folks that somehow get the loudest mouthpiece when you talk about faith, when you talk about Christianity, when you talk about Jesus, because those are the loud voices that we hear. And one of the main reasons we started this entire show was to be able to say, well, actually, I think there's a different way to interpret this. I think there's a different way to view what's going on here. I think this is where Jesus would interject blank into this situation. And ultimately, we wanted to be able to express the hypocrisy in the church. Now, that led us down a path where during this last presidential cycle, we kind of got a lot more political than we've ever been on the show. And why did we do that? Well, we did that simply because we saw the Christian right going all in. Like, they pushed the chips to the center of the table and they went all in on Trump. 100% hardcore, moving with him. And to me, that was unfathomable. That was crazy. It was insane. It was just plain stupid to be able to see Christians sell their souls to be able to follow Trump, who is a man. I know he's self-proclaimed Christian. I'm not even going to get into that issue. I'm just going to say Trump and all of the folks, all of the evangelical religious leaders that kind of fell in tow with him, was one of the greatest acts of hypocrisy the church has seen in the longest while. And that is what led us to talking more and more about politics here on the show. Because as much as I would like to have it this way, that you could have faith here and you could have politics here, it's not that simple in America. It's not that simple. Those two have become very strange bedfellows over the last while. And I don't necessarily think they need to go together in the way that they do. Now, on one hand, we are all people that are spiritual people, whether we say that we are atheist, agnostic, whatever, but we are all like beings that have the potential to be able to follow a faith tradition. And so that is a innate part of the human experience. Now, whether you choose to say, no, this is crap and I'm not going to follow it, or whether you choose to say, I want to follow this and seek this kind of a journey, either way, it's your choice. It's part of the human experience. And at the same time, when you begin to look at the human experience, politics, yes, the humanities grab for power, which is guised as somehow helping your country, pushing forward nationalism, all this other kind of crazy stuff. So politics is a part of human life and has been, I want to go ahead and say, in some way or form since the very beginning. So we have these two streams that are a tale as old as time. And the problem is, when you combine both of them, when you squish them both into a place, they get very morphed and mutated and bizarre, to where they start to not really look like the origins of the faith that people are trying to follow anymore when they become those kinds of strange bedfellows. It's kind of like, have you ever been on a flight? I've done this several times. When I'm on a flight and I get like the, you know, I draw the short straw where I am the guy sitting in the middle. And then I will have two very large people, whether in by height or by weight, end up sitting on both sides of me. And I am squished between those two things. And right now it feels like I am squished between religion and politics on a very long flight. And both of them don't smell so good anymore. So back to what our main point here for the show today. Later in the show, we are going to get to an interview with Christopher Maloney, who is a documentary filmmaker who has, and actually has already made his goal on Kickstarter, but there's still a couple hours, if you're listening to this live, that you can go to his Kickstarter and join in on this. He is going to be touring the country and filming this documentary called In God We Trump. And the goal of this is for him to be able to get people kind of from both sides of the aisle, like Christians from both sides of the aisle, to really talk about this Trump Christian following phenomena that's going on. It's a really interesting talk. I'm very excited to be able to see what Christopher comes up with once he is done this summer with the documentary. So stay tuned to that. That will be happening probably around the halfway mark through the show. But before we get to that, I started talking about politics, and we're going to continue to talk about politics, but in a little bit of a different frame. I have a couple of articles that I've been compiling while we've been off the air for a little while. So I have a couple of articles that really begins to, I don't know, like it's kind of those WTF articles. If you're a Christian, when you read these, you're like, oh my gosh, how is this a thing? Like, oh my gosh, how does this person still have an audience? You know, it's a bunch of those oh my goshes as you're listening to this. And so we're going to kind of talk through those things, pick through the hypocrisy, and try to figure out what the heck is going on in each of these situations. But before we get to that point, what I want to do here is I want to read this open letter, and I think it's quite brilliant. And I will read it to you, and it is a letter by Pastor Peter Olson. And he has a blog called Trinity's Portico. And this letter, which starts off kind of framing the entire conversation that we're trying to have here on the show about insane Christians and politics and the news. And it's a post that he wrote. It was actually just yesterday. And it's called An Open Letter to Reverend Franklin Graham from a Small Church Pastor. And here's how it goes. And I think Peter hits so many things on the nose. The best way to do this is just for me to read it to you. And it says this, and so this is a letter to Franklin Graham. And for those of you that don't know Franklin Graham is the son of Billy Graham, who is probably one of the most famous evangelists in America. Now, Franklin Graham runs Samaritan's Purse, which is a humanitarian Christian humanitarian outreach to those in poor nations around the world. But that may be his quote-unquote full-time job for Franklin Graham, but his part-time job is kind of just being a racially insensitive bigot, maybe the best way to put it, a racially insensitive mouthpiece to the religious right. Anytime he posts stuff on Facebook, gets millions and millions of likes and followers from his type of speech. And so this is a letter to him, and it starts like this. It says, "Dear Frank," can I call you Frank? "This is just pastor to pastor. Feel free to call me Peter. Anyway, I have to say I was flattered when I learned that your Decision America tour took a detour off the beaten path to call upon us small community churches. We are nothing if not small. We seat 30 to 40 on a good Sunday, and we are a century-old fixture of our small community. Most often, we are overlooked and overshadowed by the mega churches and politically influential religious voices like your own. We don't hold a candle to an auditorium filled with music of 100-voice choir led by professional musicians. We will probably never be recognized in a nationally syndicated media, and after all, we don't do anything really newsworthy. We just preach the good news of Jesus. We love one another the best we can. We feed the hungry that come to our doors. We care for the sick. We comfort the dying. And we bury the dead. So thanks for thinking of us. Rest assured that we are ready to respond to your calls of prayer and action." Now, I have to say, though, that I was a little confused by your summons. Of all the things that worry me, loss of religious freedom for Christians in America isn't one of them. I can't say I've ever experienced anything in this country that would be reasonably called a restriction on my religious liberty, much less persecution. You started talking about attacks on Christianity, and I thought you might have been referring to the racially motivated slayings of pastors and lay people at Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston sometime back. Or I figured you were referring to the slaughter of the Coptic Christians in Egypt this last Palm Sunday. That's what I call persecution. But having to pay a judgment for refusing to bake a cake for a same-sex couple in violation of a law against discrimination? This you call persecution? There's a letter in the Bible written by the Apostle Peter. Ever heard of him? He's an expert on persecution, having been on the receiving end of that more than once. He says you don't get divine kudos from suffering the consequences of the law, even if you're a Christian. Moreover, there is a Christian fellow named Paul, aka Saul, who wrote a letter to a church in Rome nearly 2,000 years ago. And he said that if your enemy is hungry, you should feed him. So wouldn't it have been the Christian way to have baked a cake for the same-sex couple in your example? And even if you deem them enemies, I'm still confused. But in any event, Frank, let's get to this persecution complex. Stop with the drama already. You are not under attack just because you have to follow the rules like everybody else. Look, I understand the owners of this establishment you mentioned in your speech don't approve of gay and lesbian people getting married. They don't have to approve them. But if they are going to do business in this country, they do have to follow the law against discrimination, just like the rest of us. If you don't like the rules, don't join the game. It's that simple. Furthermore, I don't understand why baking a cake for people whose conduct you find personally offensive is such a big deal. Heck, Frank, if all of us small church pastors refused to bury everyone whose conduct we didn't approve of, the country would be 10 feet deep in corpses. And I'm struggling too with your claim that Donald Trump is the champion for religious freedom. What freedoms are we talking about here, Frank? The freedom to lie with impunity? The freedom to grab young girls by the genitals? The freedom to discriminate against people of color in the sale and rental of real estate? The freedom to refer to women as dogs, fat pigs, and ugly? The freedom to call your opponents idiots, losers, liars, and frauds? The freedom to slander people with accusations of criminal conduct based absolutely on no evidence? By my count, the above violate at least 4 of the 10 commandments. If Donald Trump is the champion of American Christianity, God save us from our enemies. Now, this is a great post by Pastor Olson. And it goes on. So if you're interested, you can actually go and look this up on Rev, like Reverend, R-E-V, Olson.com. And I'll tell you, the rest of this letter is just spot on in what he's talking about. And this brings me to that whole confusion that I have about Christians making Donald Trump their Messiah and their champion. I've even heard people saying God has put him there, specifically appointed this man to carry out the Christian agenda. Because if you read the news, as most of you hopefully do, it really seems Donald Trump is all about his own agenda. Not America's agenda, not the Christian agenda, not even the agenda for the people that elected him. Really just seems to be about one person, and that person is him. So when we begin to try to call him our champion, our savior, our fake messiah, I think we really have to kind of go back and check ourselves, especially when it comes to our faith. Like, why are we so obsessed with trying to put our hope in such a flawed person? Or actually, why would we put all of our hope for our country in any one person? Because what that does to us, what that does to us is it abdicates our role as Christians, as people of faith, and actually just as good American citizens in our own communities. So if we're abdicating all of this to another person, we're really just checking out, sitting on the couch, and then just watching to see what happens. Now, we'll complain when the world doesn't evolve or change or move in directions that we don't like. So we become very critical, and we become very bitter and very cynical, but we do nothing about it. Now, if you've listened to the show anytime, I will tell you, I have very strong cynical leanings. But, and maybe this is just my own justification, I'm allowed to be cynical, but I'm also allowed to be hopeful. And those two things matter if I stay engaged in what's happening around me in my community and in my country. And nowhere, nowhere are we called to be able to have an advocate for our faith where we do nothing and they do everything for us. So let's spin into a little bit more of the fun crazy. So our first article comes from an interview that was happening on Jim Baker's show. Now, for those of you that don't remember Jim Baker, Jim Baker was the founder of PTL, praise the Lord, and he was one of the first, not the first, but one of the first major televangelists, Jim and Tammy Baker, back in the day, back in the 80s, had a huge following, huge scandals, huge fallout, and guess what? Jim's still on the air. Jim is still out there doing his thing over the airwaves. And he had, he had Joel Richardson, who is the author of apocalyptic Christian books, which, for those that don't know, is an entire weird genre in the Christian literary world out there. There's lots of weird genres if you want to look into. There's like Amish love stories, like Amish romance novels. That's an entire weird Christian genre of books. But yes, post-apocalyptic Christian books, it's for those that kind of love Revelation and love the idea of the world burning and judgment and all this other kind of stuff. You know, the kind of stuff that's like, I would love to invite Joel Richardson to a party because I think he'd be a ton of fun. And that is me being horribly sarcastic. And so here's what he had to say on the show. He said, there's a spirit of rage that has swept the nation. And he begins to kind of unpack this thing, and he begins to use Black Lives Matter as an example. So he says, Black Lives Matter. There's a very sacred issue there that much of the black community feels, and it's legitimate. But then, well, I'll have to probably do this in more of my televangelist voice. So, but then Satan comes along, and he subverts it, and he gets these folks, and he preempts it. And he continues to talk about this idea, especially like that, it's wrong for us to have a voice. It is wrong for us to be able to speak out against Trump, which is crazy. And so he says this in the interview. He says, in my opinion, when you see the rage of Satan directed against something, that's usually the evidence that God is involved, because Satan is enraged in what God is doing in the earth. And yes, there's a lot of rage. And Donald Trump, and I'll be honest, I wrestled through a lot of issues during the early parts of his campaign, but I've become solidly convicted in my spirit that the Lord is using this administration. He's doing something quite powerful. And it's for that reason that the rage of Satan, the irrational rage of Satan, is directed towards this man. And so he goes on to talk about this idea that to call out, to push back against the Trump agenda means you're aligning yourself with Satan, which is one of those great kind of like straw man arguments. Like, so which is it? Which are you? Are you with God? Are you with Satan? And when you have these like these really thinly veiled arguments, what people tend to do is they already set up this kind of binary system. So if you're with Trump, you're with God. If you're not with Trump, you're not with God. And that's a way for people to be able to persecute against others. Oh, you're not with the Lord because you're not with Trump, which is crazy, which is absolutely flipping insane. That we are not allowed to let our own faith inform how we vote, how we think, who we support, who we protest against, or any of those other things. I mean, there's this kind of big deal that goes on in the Bible called free will. And I think there's also a pretty big deal about this idea of us needing to wrestle through our faith for how we walk it out in the world that we live in. So I always love it when people tell me who to vote for and who to support and also somehow hang my salvation in the midst of it. Yeah, so I cry party foul on this one. And next, we have some more goodness from Jerry Falwell Jr. So, oh, Jerry Falwell Jr., which this is an interesting thing, especially with these two like articles kind of coming out this week. Because, again, let's trace this back. PTL, Jim Baker, scandal, money laundering, all sorts of other crazy stuff. Started PTL with Jerry Falwell. And now we have Jerry Falwell Jr., who runs Liberty University, which I feel like is kind of the equivalent to an education that tells you to bury your head in the sand and just go la 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 la, facts, science, no, keep those out, la 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 la, I need to keep my worldview where it is, ignore, delete, yeah, that guy, and yeah, that university. And if you know Falwell Jr., he was one of the first to go out and wholeheartedly back Donald Trump, which is problematic for many reasons that I don't even know if I have time to go into here. And so he was recently talking on Fox News and said this. He said, I think evangelicals have found their dream president. And he goes on to talk about that he is all about reuniting Israel with America and appointing people of faith throughout the administration. And because of these reasons, all evangelicals need to be highly supportive of Donald Trump. And he went on to say in this interview, he was trashing Republicans, calling them names, saying those that don't support the president make my blood boil. And then he said this, and I'm going to quote him. And he said, honestly, I have more respect for Democrats than I do Republicans, Falwell said. At least the Democrats admit what they believe and they say it up front. And at least you know what you're dealing with, which, again, he's saying that in a horribly flippant manner. And this is, yes, Jerry Falwell, the guy that thinks students in his university should be able to have concealed carry permits and bring guns to class. He's the guy that's university, if I can use that in very heavy quotes, finger quotes happening, is a huge proponent of creationism, a literal creationism, where we read the Bible literally like it's a scientific book and we don't pay attention to science. Yes, that university. Yes, that Jerry Falwell Jr. And calling out evangelicals, telling them. And again, this echoes the thing that we heard on the Jim Baker show, that if you're not supporting the president, you are somehow on the wrong side, that God is moving forward and you are moving against him. These guys have certainly some sort of a pair on them for being able to go out and trash other members of the Christian faith for not believing or really for not voting the way that they do. And I continue to just shake my head and just say, where, oh, where has Christianity gone? Like, where and along the path did it totally just go I mean, take a hard right turn and just start driving somewhere else. I mean, this is crazy. And in the short time that I have here, let's just talk through this, okay? Let's talk through Trump, and then let's talk about Jesus. Okay, so Jesus calls for us to be able to be a voice for the voiceless, to reach out to those that are being marginalized in any society, and to give them dignity and a voice. Now, both these characters that I've previously mentioned are very big. I mean, whether it's Caldwell or Trump or even Baker, they're very big on this idea of really just pushing down the LGBTQ crowd and calling them all sorts of hosts of horrible names. And they, in many ways, are the marginalized in our country right now. And I don't even care where you stand on all that stuff, Christians. We're still called to love people. Now let's talk about our enemies. What did Jesus say about our enemies? Well, he told us we're supposed to love them. We're supposed to love them. And when we see like bans on Muslims in our country, when we see us keeping refugees out who are in absolute need, does that sound like something that Jesus would do? You know, Jesus had, I would go as far to say, was probably one of the original feminists out there. And we see how this president treats women. And actually, we see how a lot of these conservative schools will treat women as well. I think it's like Southwest University, which is a Christian university. They actually, and I don't know if they still do this, but up until a few years back, they actually had a homemaking course for women, teaching women, you can get your degree in how to be a good homemaker, be a good wife. Yeah, that's really elevating women to an equal status with men because women were created in the image of God, just like men were. Yes, those guys. And so I continue to go back. So we're not even, like, there's misogyny, there's the lying, there's the collusion, there's just so many issues going on within the Trump presidency. And for Christian leaders to go out and tell people, we have to follow him, like, we have to follow him. Like, don't pay attention to what's going on. This is, God's got a plan here in the midst of this. God's going to use the collusion for good. God's going to use the grabbing women by the for good. No, he's not. This is insane. This is a deeply flawed man that is in the office. And let's leave religion out of this. Let's just call it what it is. He's dirty. He's out for himself. And he's obstructing justice. That's what it is. So let's not say this is God's man. Let's not say to follow him is to follow God. All of that stuff is absolutely crazy. And maybe even though this is a word people have called me before, I would say this is absolute heresy. We are not called to put our faith in an elected official. And even if we had someone that was great out there, let's say we have a candidate that everybody just loves, I would still take a great big pause before beginning to say, this is God's will and this is God's man. And we have to support him or we're against God. That's crazy. So now let's move on to our interview with Christopher Maloney. Here we go. So I'm sitting here today with Christopher Maloney, who has a Kickstarter campaign that is almost to their goal. What Christopher is wanting to do is make a documentary called In God We Trump. So welcome to the show, Christopher.
Hi there.
So Christopher, first of all, like, tell me kind of what led you to this project.
Right. Well, I've been doing a lot of documentary, nonfiction film work for a while now. That's kind of what I do. And with this most recent presidential election, it was just something that really baffled me that Donald Trump overwhelmingly got what's called the Christian vote, because as a Christian, it was my faith that kept me from even considering supporting him, because from what I could tell, so much of what he does and says is pretty strictly on the platform of hurting other people, which mm-hmm. doesn't line up with my faith. So then when he did overwhelmingly get such a huge amount of support from the evangelical community, it made me think, well, I'm obviously missing something, because this is not the faith that I know. So it kind of just, that question kind of gnawed away at me without any satisfying answers until it just kind of obsessed me to the point where I wanted to make something about it. And the response has been really positive because a lot of people are wondering that thing as well. So it kind of just, it became a project that way.
So with this project, I know on Kickstarter that you guys are getting super close to your goal. Has the project been completed and you're just seeking expenses for like distribution and travel and all that kind of stuff?
No. We are just starting. So actually, we just did our first interview yesterday. And this is just like a little bit of seed money to get us going. And then it's like the bare minimum of what we need. Like, I'm not paying myself or anything like that. It's the bare minimum of what we need to film the interviews, to put it all together, and then hopefully find a home for it.
So how are you projecting this to look on screen, like for the documentary? I mean, is this mainly interviews? And if so, like, who are you trying to interview?
Right. Well, a lot of it, kind of part of the reason why it started to kind of obsess me so much is because I went back and looked at a lot of footage of high profile Christians who endorsed Donald Trump on their television programs and their platforms and things like that. High profile Christians and televangelists who pleaded with their viewers to vote a certain way. Mm-hmm. That was sort of the initial research I was doing. And it is kind of so unsettling. There's a story to be told just from this cast of characters who all are Christians and all have their own TV shows who kind of banded behind him. So there's a story to be told with footage that's already out there, but people just haven't seen it in the way that we're going to put it together. But then most of it is like a discussion handled through a number of interviews with pastors, with political activists, with people who have written pretty extensively about the subject. Mm-hmm. Someone from the Washington Post just agreed to be part of it. So it's kind of asking that question and getting that conversation from a lot of different angles, as well as just people who don't really have any official positions. They just voted a certain way and their faith influenced how they voted. And we're hoping to get kind of both sides of that and come up with some attempt at an answer of this question that baffles a lot of people in the faith community.
And so from your perspective, because I know I'm hearing that you've done a bunch of research, and this is something that we kind of skewer a lot on our show, is the fact that a lot of like high-powered evangelical Christians seem to have sold their souls to hop on the Trump train. Do you feel like this is just an issue of power and money, or is there something else going on?
I wish I knew. I do think it's odd because I noticed that Donald Trump has a lot in common with the televangelists who support him. on a superficial level, like the kind of outlandish hair and the fake tan, and even like, if you look at how his homes are decorated and you look at like the inside of TBN or something, they all have that that kind of taste for like chintzy fake gold. It's very strange to me. I think it's like a personality thing almost. But I think it's, I don't know. It seems like, I actually, full disclosure, I used to work for a televangelist doing like video editing. Mm-hmm. And there's just a certain type of personality that goes along with wanting to do that type of work, which is to like put yourself at the forefront of things. I do think that they have that in common. Mm-hmm. But
they kind of all have that snake oil salesman vibe to them. And you know, the bottom line is about money. I went on a tour just more or less as a joke of like one of the TBN studios down in California. And you are not wrong, like about things being gold. Like some of the I remember the urinals were gold. I mean, not really gold, but they're, you know, gold spray paint or whatever it is. I mean, it is there's a certain, I guess, gaudiness to that, which is weird because at the same time, that attracts a lot of people. Because I think, you know, some of it's that idea of like, I'm a success story, whether it's because like it's Trump, I'm a good businessman, or as televangelist, I'm a success story because God blesses me and, you know, primarily blesses me monetarily.
I think anytime a ministry or a cause becomes about one person, it is a form of idolatry. So like there are these kind of big mega churches. Some of them, when you walk in the foyer, there's a big picture of the pastor instead of like anything having really to do with the faith. It's more about the person whose church it is. And that type of personality they have in common. I used to watch Celebrity Apprentice back, you know, before he was getting involved in politics. And they did an episode that took place inside his apartment. And that was part of like what the contestants talked about, was like how just, I don't know, just how tasteless the decor was. And almost like, it was like a way of saying, look how rich I am.
Yeah. I mean, well, it all feels like a casino.
Yeah. That's the other thing too. As someone who's made his fortune in part by being involved in the gambling business, which normally, I grew up in church where gambling was pretty much accepted as a sin. So
yeah,
those same people are the ones who got behind him and put him in office, which, you know, that's one of the things we're kind of wondering why that happened.
Well, it is, and it's one thing I've noticed is that that what Trump did effectively was create this idea of fake news, or that there's a difference between your facts and my facts, because when I've interacted a lot with folks, you would say are more or less his constituency, even especially the Christians, you know, anytime that you start to bring stuff up to them, it's almost like they put their fingers in their ears and they're just like, la, 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 this is fake news. I cannot hear this. This is fake. It's rigged. And they've created this whole narrative to where there's tons of people that aren't even willing to listen to any outside perspective. And especially when it comes to the Christians, those kind of real conservative right-wing Christians, what they've also done is they've learned to insulate themselves from common culture. So, again, it kind of is one of those things where they begin to put up blinders and they simply just have like tunnel vision to only see what they want to see or only consume like the news or any kind of media that just backs what they already believe. Mm-hmm. And I think some of this stems back to the way the church exists now, because the church really anymore, I don't feel like is teaching people critical thought, you know, how to use your faith as a lens to be able to see the outside world. Not that it's, you know, good or bad, but you just use your faith as some sort of a lens.
Yeah, they go about it with their support for Donald Trump the same way that they go about their faith, which is to, if they admit that they have doubts or questions, it's like suddenly they're not real Christians, because they're ashamed at having doubts or having critical questions, because that to them means their faith is not strong. And that's the same way that they're treating Donald Trump. If they have doubts about him or they have questions about him, it's like they're not fully supporting him anymore. It's it's the exact same approach. The person we interviewed yesterday, he writes a Christian blog called Freelance Christianity, and he's the chair of the philosophy department at Providence College. But he was talking about how for so many Christians, the idea of like having doubts that cause you to really figure out what you believe about your faith is so frightening to them. Mm-hmm. They don't want to start with that kind of questioning because they're afraid of what they'll find on the other side. He said it's such an important part for him personally of his faith, because it helps him to understand more about what he believes and ultimately brings him closer to God. But for some reason, there's a huge fear of that. And it's transferring over to not being willing to question the presidency either.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. I mean, because what ends up happening, I feel like when people's faith become very like cardboard, you know, you end up having whatever, like 10, I don't know, like 10 things that you say, this is what it means to be a Christian. And I must do all of these things. And then pretty much like, you know, once you can say I've hit these things, I'm good. As opposed to the idea that doubt is a component of faith. I mean, the idea that we don't have it figured out, the idea that somehow God is bigger than we can understand, or even simply that when you begin to look at the Bible, you know, a lot of folks would probably end up saying, this is all I need to know about God. And so, you know, if there's this God of the universe, I would hope that there's more to him simply than just that book. Not saying that that book is not important, but I feel like there's something larger going on here that that often gets missed by people because, like what you said, they're afraid.
Yeah, I think people who don't question are ultimately really missing out on the richness of their of what their spiritual life could be.
Now, I was also noticing here on your Kickstarter page, too, you have like that it was recently reported that 14% of Christian churchgoers have since left the church because of something related to the election. What do you think is behind that? Is it simply like that, you know, the Christians put so much of their support behind the our orange messiah of a president that a bunch of people just got sick of it, or is there something else going on?
Well, I can say personally for me, because I haven't been going to church weekly lately, and it is related to that, because the church that I was going to, like, it's very accepting, and they were pretty much right on, except everybody who goes there, with the exception of just a very few, are avid Trump supporters.
Mm.
And it was really just a feeling that I didn't belong there anymore. I mean, like, I don't believe that I'm not welcome with God, but I do believe that myself and my convictions are not really welcome in that church. And I'm sure that that's what's behind most of it.
Mm. No, I think that that's a very good point. And furthermore, like the thing that has really just baffled me a lot with all of this, and it's no surprise. I mean, I know like the religious right has aligned themselves with the Republican Party for what, like the past like 50 years. So, you know, all of this isn't like surprising. But what does surprise me is the fact that, you know, you can see people, and I feel like this is what we've lost is, first and foremost, you know, I don't think politics and religion need to mix. You know, I feel like they're two very different planes. Now, my faith can help me inform issues that I care about, but they're not something that needs to be intermingled, because, you know, I keep going back to the fact that, you know, if you follow like the ways of Jesus, the teachings of Jesus, let's just even simply get that. We don't even have to get into denominational stuff. You know, let's just take Jesus for what he said. And then you begin to look at a lot of the stuff that's Trump is trying to roll out, and I can't reconcile those two things. And, you know, you've got like Jerry Falwell Jr.'s of the world out just saying, well, it's him. I've heard some other stuff. If you're looking for footage, I can probably send you some, you know, where people are saying, if you speak out against the president, that is the Antichrist spirit in you. And
Jim Baker just said that.
Yep. He said that. And I was just like, wait, what are you, what? Like, I feel like this is a really bad math equation that they're trying to put together here, that will never be solved, because no, I don't think God cares about that. I mean, I think God cares about the people here. But I think some of this weirdness that happens is that a lot of Christians really believe this is a country that was completely founded on Christian values. And everything, you know, that God helped all of this happen. And this is something that, is God ordained. We are like the shining country amongst the rest of the pagan world. And those kind of ideologies, those kind of thoughts, I think really twist everything that we do. Because I'm not going to say God didn't have a hand in stuff happening when our nation was founded, but overall, like, you look at our nation's history, like between slavery, the handling of the Indians, and such and so forth. I'm going to go, I don't know that this was necessarily Christian values. I think it's really just the capitalistic values of me, 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 me that have been a driving force in our country since its inception.
Yeah, it's a common idea that somehow America is exceptional and more favored by God than any other country. But it's not biblical, for one thing.
No, but not at all.
I mean, by any means. But also, it's an easy way to write off the rest of the world and to just not concern yourself with the poor, which is what Jesus talked about almost more than anything.
Yeah.
So I think it's a coping mechanism because once you start to open your heart to the suffering that's going on in the world, it is a real pain to live with. It's a real burden to think about how much compassion is required of us if we claim to be Christians.
Yeah.
And the easy way out is to just say, well, if they accepted the Lord, then they'd be fine. So that's really their problem. And that happens a lot. And I think ultimately it's just a way of kind of giving yourself a free pass.
You're right. And I think that that's a problem that what we see in the American church is that faith is something that has become very cheap and easy. You know, you just show up on a Sunday, put some money in the plate, volunteer here and there, and I'm good. Whereas if you really go back to scripture and look at it, Jesus is calling us to give of ourselves, especially in a way that inconveniences us. In a way, like for me to really be able to sacrifice for somebody else means I am giving up. It could be my time, my money, could be my life. It could be all of these other things. And that's faith that has weight to it. That's faith that has a cost to it. And I think that we've lost a lot of that. I think we've in the American church, we've moved more towards comfort and, just comfort. And like you'd said earlier, like just thinking since I'm a Christian, I'm exceptional. And because I'm God's chosen person. And if you're not part of my tribe, you are an enemy. Which Jesus says a lot about how we're supposed to treat our enemies as well, too, which gets forgotten.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it is a tribal thing. It's kind of, Jerry Falwell did a very, very good job of aligning conservative thought with the Christian population in this country. And it's really never, I mean, its effects are still very much apparent. Mm-hmm. So whatever he did to convince people of that, he did very well because it's still around. Like, I've been in churches where it was like the idea of having guns is like somehow a Christian idea.
Yeah.
It's become something very far from Jesus's life and ministry.
Well, even there was, I remember reading a little while back, there's a church in, I believe it's Alabama, because of course, this would probably happen in the South.
Yeah.
That they were trying to get some sort of a permitting so they could have armed security guards in their church.
That passed.
Oh, it passed.
It was a piece of legislation, and it passed.
When I read that, I was just like, I can't even like how many like wrongs is that we need to somehow have guns in church. You know, where is, and I think it comes down to like what you'd said earlier about how faith is tough and then there's doubt with faith, but there's also a risk with faith. And I think with that risk, you know, being able to make people feel comfortable because people have guns in the church that we're now like safe. I feel like that's just ridiculous. And it has no place. It has no place in the church. And the guns and violence tend to go hand in hand. And that's one of those things that I feel like that, you know, it's what God and guns is what I hear from a lot of people down in the South as well, too. Those are like their two things. And
I mean, that has a lot to do with people leaving the church, too. I mean, I think if this church has room for guns, then it doesn't have room for me because it's just not, I don't feel that I'm going to be comfortable, in a place that thinks that that's even necessary. I used to work for a church that the pastor had like bodyguards, and it wasn't even that big of a church. Mm-hmm. And it was just a way of like feeling important. And they all had their little like security headsets that they talked to each other. Mm-hmm. I thought, give me a break. Like what a waste of resources.
Yeah. But it's also a thing in like, especially in those types of churches, it's a thing about optics too. You know, it's not just that they feel important. They look important. Mm-hmm. Because of course someone's going to storm into that church and shoot that guy because he's so important. I don't even know like what the logic is there, but it's an optics thing, and people feed off that. Like people feed off wanting to be around what is perceived to be successful people, whether mm-hmm. you know, it's in the business world, and that's how you get those snake oil salesmen getting their followings that continue to bilk people for money over and over and over again. So this is crazy. So no, I love this. I love this project that you're doing. Do you have like a general, like estimate on when stuff's going to be out, or what's your timeline?
Well, I'd like to get it done. I'd like to get it finished while Trump is still in office.
you may have to hurry up.
Yeah, I know. I'm starting to get concerned about that. I'm going to try to get it done by the end of the summer. I'm taking a tour, through the South, Kentucky, North Carolina, Alabama, to do a bunch of interviews there, mm-hmm. another trip to Washington, D.C. And then that'll be like everything I do over the summer. So I am hoping to get it done by like the beginning of September, start putting it into festivals and see how it does.
Oh, excellent, excellent. So if people are interested in getting more information about this project or following, you know, the progress, how would you recommend them do that?
They can find me on Facebook. That's pretty much all I talk about on Facebook.
Okay.
So it's Christopher Allen is my name on Facebook.
Okay.
And then or on Twitter, Maloney's Movies. And then, of course, there's the Kickstarter that people can look up.
Okay, so the Kickstarter. So if you guys go to Kickstarter out there, just look up "In God We Trump," a documentary, and you should be able to find that. Now, how close are you guys right now? I'm looking on the page. You're getting there. You guys are almost there.
Last I checked, we were $226 short, mm-hmm. and we have 5 days.
Okay. So yeah. So when does this project, it stops on, is this Wednesday, is I think what I'm seeing coming up? Wednesday, May 24th at 9:51 a.m.?
Yes.
Okay. So, yes, listeners, if you are interested in this, if you want to be able to get out and help this project, especially because you'll be hearing this this live on Tuesday, so make sure to go to Kickstarter if you are interested to get more information and potentially donate if you're interested in this. So Christopher, I am excited. I'm excited to see what comes of this. And I you know, just, I appreciate your time, and I wish you the best as you go on your summer road trip.
Thank you very much.
Well, that about wraps it up for our week here on Snarky Faith. And I want to just give a huge shout out and a huge thank you to Chris for being on our show. If you're interested in contributing and being part of his Kickstarter campaign to make the documentary film In God We Trump, you can go to Kickstarter and look up In God We Trump. There's still a little bit of time left if you want to hop in and be a part of this that he is doing. So yes, Chris, Godspeed to you. Thank you so much for being on here. And as we begin to end this broadcast, just a reminder that you can always catch us on podcast at www.snarkyfaith.com. And if you want to, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, where you get the latest information. And also, what we are starting to do is we're going to start doing a once-a-month live show over Google Hangouts. And so if you're interested in being part of that live show, of joining us, asking questions, and interacting with us, go to our website, snarkyfaith.com, and sign up to be on our newsletter. Once you're on our newsletter, you will get exclusive access to be a part of that show. And lastly, if you are feeling particularly generous, go and look us up on iTunes. Look up Snarky Faith Radio over there on iTunes and give us a great rating, because those ratings help keep us up on iTunes. It helps pump us up to be higher in the rankings so more and more people can be a part of this snarky tribe that we have going on here. That's all I've got today. Again, thank you so much for listening. The show is nothing without our awesome listeners. So thank you guys. Have a great week. We will be back again next week. I am out of here.
WCOM is listener-supported community radio, and Snarky Faith is only possible through our sponsors. Aqueduct Conference Center was established in 1978 as a peaceful destination for small group meetings, special events, conferences, retreats, and weddings. For more information, go to www.aqueductcc.com. We are also sponsored by Lumen. Lumen, a spiritual community of seekers, sojourners, question askers, doubters, and skeptics, is a collective of fellow travelers that embrace the truth that all life is sacred, hope is real, and tomorrow can be better than today. All are welcome. You can find more information at www.lumencommunities.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.